Nehemiah's story inspires us to act courageously for righteousness, trusting that God remembers and honours those who pursue His glory and His purposes.
This is Mission 66, taking you through the Word of God from the ministry of Bible teacher and pastor, Dr. Luis Seau. In partnership with Transworld Radio, Mission 66 is produced and heard around the world in several languages. Let's hear from our teacher, John Matthews, and his co-host, Esther Sisulu, as they start us off today in our survey of God's Word.
Welcome, dear friends, as we finish off the book of Nehemiah today. Now, the people of Judah were returning to the land that they were removed from by the Babylonians. Now, the temple had been rebuilt, the wall had been rebuilt, and the people had renewed their covenant with God with the help of Ezra the priest. However, there were still just a few matters to be settled, and it was not an easy task. Now, what would the newly restored land of Judah look like under the leadership of Ezra and Nehemiah? Well, today, our teacher, John Matthews, will guide our understanding with these final chapters.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to Mission 66 for this latest episode. So good to be with you today. As Esther said there, we're near the end of the book of Nehemiah, who was the man who rebuilt the wall of Jerusalem, and he was also the official magistrate of the renewed land of Judah. Now, there's plenty to be covered here, so let's take a look at what the Bible tells us in the very first verse here of Nehemiah chapter 11, where it says, "Now the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, and the rest of the people cast lots to bring one out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, whilst 9 out of 10 remained in the other towns. And the people blessed all the men who willingly offered to live in Jerusalem." Isn't that interesting? So even though the temple and now the wall had been restored, Jerusalem was still effectively a ghost town because the damaged houses, well, they hadn't been repaired in decades. And so it was far from easy to live here at this point in time, because it was a city that was still destroyed. There were so many repairs that needed to be made. The infrastructure was needing to be reestablished. And so some of them are willing to live in the midst of this ruin out of the goodness of their heart, really, because there weren't enough volunteers. So what they have to do is they have to draw lots to see which of the Judeans were going to have to join them in this ravaged city. And then the chapter goes on to list the chiefs of the province who lived in Jerusalem and the priests, as well as the Levites and the gatekeepers. But in the towns of Judah, everyone lived on his own property in their towns. And in Jerusalem lived certain of the sons of Judah and of the sons of Benjamin. These were, you might remember, the two tribes that once comprised the kingdom of Judah before they were taken into captivity in Babylon. And then verse 22 says this: "The overseer of the Levites in Jerusalem was Uzzi, the son of Bani, son of Hashabiah, son of Mataniah, son of Micah, of the sons of Asaph, the singers, over the work of the house of God. For there was a command from the king concerning them, and a fixed provision for the singers, as every day required. But then there were people who were living in the villages outside of Jerusalem, and they're listed then in chapter 11, and this meticulous record ensures that everything is chronologically documented and organized and preserved as part of history for future generations. And here we are reading it today. And then chapter 12, you have a list of the priests and the Levites who came to Judah from Persia with Zerubbabel. Now, that would have been the first wave of returnees who helped in the rebuilding of the temple. And after that, there is a significant section beginning with verse 27, which describes the ceremony of dedication for the newly restored wall of Jerusalem, which, remember, had been completed remarkably in just 52 days. This is a Nehemiah chapter 12 and verse 27, and it reads like this. And at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought the Levites in all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate the dedication with gladness, with thanksgivings and with singing, with cymbals, harps and lyres. And the sons of the singers gathered together from the district surrounding Jerusalem and from the villages of the Netophathites, also from Beth Gilgal and from the region of Geba and Amzameth. For the singers had built for themselves villages around Jerusalem, and the priests and the Levites, well, they purified themselves, and they purified the people and the gates and the wall. Then I, Nehemiah, brought the leaders of Judah up onto the wall and appointed two great choirs that gave thanks. One went to the south on the wall to the Dung Gate, and after them went Hoshaiah and half of the leaders of Judah and Azariah, Ezra, Meshullam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah and Jeremiah, and certain of the priest's sons with trumpets, Zechariah, the son of Jonathan, son of Shemaiah, son of Mattaniah, son of Micaiah, son of Zakur, son of Asaph, and his relatives, Shemaiah, Azarel, Milalai, Gilalai, Mai, Nethanel, Judah, and Hanani, with the musical instruments of David, the man of God. And Ezra the scribe went before them. At the fountain gate they went up straight before them by the stairs of the city of David. At the ascent of the wall above the house of David to the water gate on the east. Note the incredible detail here, verse 38. The other choir of those who gave thanks went to the north, and I followed them with half of the people on the wall above the Tower of the Ovens to the broad wall and above the gate of Ephraim and by the gate of Yeshana and by the fish gate and the Tower of Hananel and the Tower of the Hundred to the sheep gate. And they came to a halt at the gate of the guard. So both choirs of those who gave thanks stood in the house of God, and I and half of the officials with me, and the priests, Eliakim, Messiah, Miniamin, Micaiah, Eloinai, Zechariah, and Hananiah with trumpets, and Messiah, Shemai, Eleazar, Uzai, Jehohanan, Malkiah, Elam, and Ezer. And the singers sang with Jezreiah as their leader, and they offered great sacrifices that day, and they rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The women and children also rejoiced, and the joy of Jerusalem was heard far away. What a picture and what a sound this would have been. And then it says, on that day, men were appointed over the storerooms, the contributions, the first fruits, and the tithes to gather into them the portions required by the law for the priests and for the Levites, according to the fields of the towns. For Judah rejoiced over the priests and the Levites who ministered, and they performed the service of their God and the service of purification, as did the singers and the gatekeepers, according to the command of David and his son Solomon. For long ago, in the days of David and Asaph, there were directors of the singers, and there were songs of praise and thanksgiving to God. And all Israel, in the days of Zerubbabel and in the days of Nehemiah, gave the daily portions for the singers and the gatekeepers, and they set apart that which was for the Levites, and the Levites set apart that which was for the sons of Aaron. As we pointed out before, it was the tithes and the offerings of the people who paid for the support of the Levites who ministered full-time at the temple, and then the priests were paid with a tenth of whatever was given to the Levites. Okay, now we're ready for the last chapter of Nehemiah, as this faithful man oversees some final reforms. And Nehemiah chapter 13 starts like this. It says, "On that day, they read from the book of Moses in the hearing of the people, and in it was found written that no Ammonite or Moabite should ever enter the assembly of God, for they did not meet the people of Israel with bread and water, but they had hired Balaam against them to curse them. Yet our God turned that curse into a blessing. And as soon as the people heard the law, they separated from Israel all those of foreign descent." Now before this, Eliashib the priest, who was appointed over the chambers of the house of our God, and who was related to Tobiah, prepared for Tobiah a large chamber where they had previously put the grain offering, the frankincense, the vessels, and the tithes of grain, wine, and oil, which were given by commandment to the Levites, singers, and gatekeepers, and the contributions for the priests. While this was taking place, I was not in Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I went to the king, and after some time I asked leave of the king and came to Jerusalem, and I then discovered the evil that Eliashib had done for Tobiah, preparing for him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. And I was very angry, and I threw all the household furniture of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I gave orders, and they cleansed the chambers, and I brought back there the vessels of the house of God with the grain offering and the frankincense. I also found out that the portions of the Levites had not been given to them, so that the Levites and the singers who did the work had fled each to his field. So I confronted the officials, saying, "Why is the house of God forsaken?" And I gathered them together, and I set them in their stations. Then all Judah brought the tithe of the grain, wine, and oil into the storehouses. And I appointed as treasurers over the storehouses Shelemiah the priest, Zadok the scribe, and Pedaiah of the Levites, and as their assistant Hanan, the son of Zakur, son of Mattaniah, for they were considered reliable, and their duty was to distribute to their brothers. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and do not wipe out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for his service. In those days I saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in heaps of grain, loading them on donkeys, and also wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of loads which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them on the day when they sold food. Tyrians also, who lived in the city, they brought in fish and all kinds of goods and sold them on the Sabbath to the people of Judah in Jerusalem itself. Then I confronted the nobles of Judah, saying to them, "What is this evil thing that you are doing, profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers act in this way? And did not our God bring all this disaster on us and on this city? And now you are bringing more wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath." And as soon as it began to grow dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I commanded that the doors should be shut and gave orders that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. And I stationed some of my servants at the gates that no load might be brought in on the Sabbath day. Then the merchants and the sellers of all kinds of wares lodged outside Jerusalem once or twice. But I warned them, saying to them, "Why do you lodge outside the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you." And from that time on, they did not come on the Sabbath. Then I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves and come and guard the gates to keep the Sabbath day holy. Remember this also in my favor, O my God, and spare me according to the greatness of your steadfast love. In those days also I saw the Jews who had married women of Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab, and half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod, and they could not speak the language of Judah, but only the language of each people. And I confronted them and cursed them and beat some of them and pulled out their hair. And I made them take an oath in the name of God, saying, "You shall not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons or for yourselves." Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin on account of such women? Among the many nations there was no king like him, and he was beloved by his God, and God made him king over all of Israel. Nevertheless, foreign women made even him to sin. Shall we then listen to you and do all this great evil and act treacherously against our God by marrying foreign women? And one of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib the high priest, was the son-in-law of Shanballat the Horonite. Therefore I chased him from me. Remember them, O my God, because they have desecrated the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. Thus I cleansed them from everything foreign, and I established the duties of the priests and Levites, each in his work. And I provided for the wood offering at appointed times, and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, for good. And there, Esther, ends the book of Nehemiah.
This is Mission 66, and my name is Esther. And friend, we're going to delve into some questions in just a moment with our knowledgeable friend and teacher, John Matthews. Now, speaking of questions, if perhaps you have a question or a comment of your own, I do encourage you to feel free to comment them on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook and on Instagram. And while you're there, simply type in Mission 66, like the page, and let's get this Mission 66 conversation going. Okay, John, now back to you. Where did Nehemiah's authority actually come from? Did he have the authority to start pulling out people's hair and tossing out Tobias' furniture? Where did he get that from?
Well, he saw, didn't he, clearly the consequences of some of these actions and how in the past it had led to so many deaths, it had led to exile, it had led to slavery. And so there was this earnestness in Nehemiah that this shouldn't happen again. And maybe we are surprised by some of his actions and responses, but he was the governor and he was under the authority of the Persian Empire itself. And he answered directly to King Artaxerxes for what was going on and what indeed happened in the province. Now, beyond that, we know that Nehemiah was raised up by God for this very job of rebuilding and restoration.
Well, just for context, John, I asked this question because what caught my attention here was how he handled the high priest Eliashib, or even Tobiah, and even the son-in-law of Sanballat.
Yeah, and you know, Nehemiah knew what the right thing to do was, and he wasn't afraid to put that into action. And here we see Sanballat. Well, look, he was just a known troublemaker against the work of rebuilding from the very start. He was throwing obstacles in the way throughout the wall's construction, and Tobiah was the same. And now, after the project was completed, these people were trying to infiltrate and join the celebration and do it in this shameless way and put themselves in a position of prominence. And Nehemiah knew that there's only one who should be put on the altar of people's hearts, and that was God alone. Certainly not Tobiah or Sanballat or anybody else for that matter.
Yeah, well, that was the right conclusion from Nehemiah indeed. So it says that the Levites were neglected. In what way were they neglected?
Well, there was this time, we're told in the passage, where Nehemiah has to return to Persia. And whilst he's gone, in his absence, things just start to creak at the seams and they start to fall apart a little. The Levites had not been given their rightful salaries or their tithes. So, of course, they had families to feed, and they did what any of us might have done. They returned to their own lands, like going to nearby towns, and so the maintenance of the temple suffered as a result. These were still early days, weren't they, following the return? So Nehemiah reprimands the officials responsible for maintaining the temple of God and those officials who were responsible for paying the Levites, and he then quickly restores the Levites and the singers to their proper places, the proper positions, giving priority to the worship service. And it seems here, from what we read, that it was Nehemiah's presence, his faith, his godly inspiration. It was the glue that held everything together in these early vulnerable days. And there was a big responsibility on him, but other people, well, they needed to follow his example.
John, there is this phrase in chapter 11, and it refers to Jerusalem as a holy city. So, of course, I think there's a lot of implication just in that phrase. Perhaps you can go into what that means.
Yeah, this is pretty unique, actually, because the Old Testament generally doesn't refer to Jerusalem as the holy city, not directly anyway. And Nehemiah uses this expression here in chapter 11. He's, of course, writing the book. And what he means is that Jerusalem was indeed the city that represented God's covenant with David. It's the city of David is another way that it's known. Holy, because it was set apart by God for his special purpose in history. But I think really wise for us to be cautious not to assign any kind of improper mysticism to this place. Living in what was once described as a holy city doesn't make anybody better nor more spiritual than anybody else. Neither does it imply any special power to them, nor indeed within that city in the here and the now.
Well, thanks, John. And with that, we come to the end of our look through the book of Nehemiah. So why not conclude this summary with a word of encouragement?
Yeah, well, the final chapters, Esther, of Nehemiah highlight his remarkable leadership and his focus, really, in rebuilding Jerusalem and also restoring its spiritual integrity. Chapter 11 there documented the resettlement of Jerusalem, and it emphasizes the sacrifice of those who were volunteering or indeed were chosen by lot to live in what was still a ravaged city. And Nehemiah then calls Jerusalem the holy city, which underscores its significance as the center of God's covenant with his people. Though holiness, we know, depends more on obedience to God rather than a special name or location. Chapter 12 celebrates the dedication of the rebuilt wall with this joyous worship, singing, wonderful singing, and these sacrifices showing the importance of worship and community in the renewal of Jerusalem. And then chapter 13, well, Nehemiah implements final reforms, confronts issues like Sabbath violations, intermarriage, and the misuse of temple chambers by Tobiah in particular, one of those who had always tried to hinder the work of rebuilding. And so Nehemiah expels Tobiah pretty unceremoniously and rebukes the leaders for neglecting the Levites who were ministering there in the temple. And so he's not afraid to be straight about what's important to God, not afraid either to confront sin in a decisive way. Nehemiah's leadership, it demonstrates the importance of the prioritizing of God in our lives, our cultures, our societies, standing firm against compromise. And ultimately, Nehemiah's story, what does it do? I think, you know, Esther, it inspires us to act courageously for the right things, trusting that God remembers and he honors those who pursue his glory and his purposes, because within his glory and his purposes is incredible freedom, forgiveness and love and a relationship with him that enables us to be whom he always knew that we could be and always intended us to be. It's a beautiful thing. So why would we not be anything but trying to be a Nehemiah in our world?
Our teacher, John Matthews, encouraging us and spurring us on to righteousness here on Mission 66. Thank you for joining us for this episode, dear friend. We look forward to continuing our journey in the Bible with you next time here on Mission 66. So until then, for myself, Esther, for John and our team, may God bless you.
As we close today's program, take a minute to download your free study guide. You'll be able to follow along every single day. Plus, you can engage with the reflection and application questions so you can apply the teaching to your life. It's a great companion resource to the audio Bible teaching of John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. To get your free study guide, visit mission66.org. That's mission66.org. You can also support the ministry of Mission 66 when you visit the site. Your gift makes it possible for this great teaching to be heard in many languages around the world. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.